Taking a look at preparing your income tax returns today with Steve Schmidt, Certified Public Accountant and Managing Director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. I'm Larry Mueller. Glad to have you listening in. Certainly, if you have a question, I hope you'll join us. Every line is already filled. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Steve, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Nice to be here, Larry.
Anything new this year or really out of the ordinary?
Oh, Larry, there were all kinds of new things this year. There were six fairly significant pieces of legislation, starting off with the economic stimulus bill in February, which, of course, gave everybody that was eligible their economic stimulus payment. Through another emergency economic stabilization bill in October, and then many other small bills in between. So there were many, many changes in 2008.
Well, we have lots of questions for you, so I think we'll just go right to the phones.
That would be fine.
Get started. Richard in South Milwaukee, you're up first. Hi, Richard.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for the program, and thank you, Steve, for your time.
You're welcome.
Steve, I had a settlement that I want to talk to you about how to handle it with the IRS.
Okay.
And I had three investments with the firm, and I terminated all three investments at the same time. One investment was regular funds, one investment was traditional IRA funds, and one investment was Roth IRA funds. Throughout, I indicated that this was just restoration of the funds because the termination was not handled in a timely manner and I lost funds. So this is a restoration of those funds, and it was no punitive damages that I was seeking. There was a settlement. And I had them write up three separate checks for it. So all along, I've kept them segregated.
Separate. Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm sure from the IRS I'm going to receive a 1099 or whatever they send out for those funds, and it's not going to indicate IRA funds on there. And what I did is a 60-day rollover of the IRA funds and the Roth IRA funds into that. I'm thinking if I just put a detailed note in there indicating that the IRS, I should be okay. What do you think?
See, first of all, how they report it out to you. If they give you a 1099, you'll have to work around the 1099 to be consistent with that. If they don't give you a 1099, then there will be no reporting to the IRS, and then just put the appropriate funds in your Roth IRA, the traditional IRA, and then keep out in your taxable account, and that should work fine. So you'll have to wait and see reporting that they're going to do to the IRS. And, you know, they gave you all one settlement check. They didn't split the checks up among the three different.
No, they did. I insisted on it.
Oh, they did. They did split it up.
Yes,
okay. So hopefully that'll be helpful, and they will just give you a 1099 on the one on your personal name and not the ones that would be in the exempt accounts.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Russ and Anigo, it's on to you now. Hi, Russ.
Morning.
Morning.
Hey, I have an HSA account, and I had to take $500 out for non-medical use. and I was just wondering, when I put that on my taxes, what I have to claim that?
Yes.
Or what's,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And then take a look at, you'll claim that as income, and then you may also be subject to a premature withdrawal penalty. Get Form 5329 and follow the instructions there for that.
Form 5329.
Yes.
Okay. Good luck, Russ. Thank you. George in Galena, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, George.
Good morning, Larry and Steve. Thanks for taking the call. Great show.
Thank you.
My question is, I'm inheriting some money from a mother's estate, and I don't know, I've heard both sides of this, whether it's taxable or not. And I heard something about a K-1 and that sort of thing. My position is that I have to, if it is taxable, keep some money out of the settlement with the rest of the family,
sure,
so that I don't have to go back to them later finding it's taxable income.
What are you receiving? What is your inheritance?
Well, it's coming from mother, his estate, who is deceased.
The nature of the property is what I'm getting.
Oh, it's cash.
It's cash. Yes. Cash will not be taxable.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Now, cash, an inheritance in cash is not taxable. However, if the estate was administered for 6 months, a year and a half, and the estate generated income during the administration of the estate, if you're a residual beneficiary, then to the extent that there's income in the estate in excess of expenses, on those distributions in that case, the income of the estate may be pulled out in tax to you rather than to the estate.
That's the minimum amount.
Yeah, that would be minimum. The estate's kind of a different entity. If it doesn't make any distribution, it pays tax on its income. If it does make distributions to residuary beneficiaries, then it pulls the income out of the estate and it's taxed to the beneficiaries. But other than that, receipt of cash should be income tax-free.
I see.
There are certain inheritances that are taxable. It's called income in respect of a decedent, IRA, retirement accounts, salary earned before death, paid after death, accrued interest on bank accounts.
Oh, I see.
Things like that might be taxable. But other than that, most inheritances are exempt.
And what is a K-1? What's that about?
A K-1 is an information reporting form that an estate uses to report out to the beneficiaries the amount on which they need to pay tax or their deductions that they're entitled to.
And it's generated by the estate?
By the estate.
Very good. Right to the point. And again, Larry, thank you. You've got so many shows in all different directions. I don't know how you guys do it, but I'm listening on and on. Thanks again.
Thanks, George. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And we now have open lines, so we can get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or again, email us at talk@wpr.org. Someone wondered, when it comes to tax preparation, what can you do with worthless stocks?
Okay, worthless stocks, assuming your investor, are treated as sold for nothing on the last day of the taxable year. And so they'll generate a short or long-term capital loss depending upon how long you held them. So you'll report that loss on Schedule D of your income tax return.
All right. There you have it. And more callers online, so we'll take some calls. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. And let's turn to Justin in Madison next. Hi, Justin. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I had a couple questions about the first-time homebuyer tax credit. We've applied for it and whatnot. We've gotten a piece of paper saying that, I don't know, they're back ordered or something, the form that we need to file. I was just curious if you had any more information. Are they, like, kind of holding off on that until, I don't know, you know, like Obama's thing goes through, or, okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we can, Stephen.
I believe that form is available on irs.gov, form 5405.
Sure, and we applied for it, and I guess they haven't sent it out. We just got a card saying that they're back-ordered or whatever, and they will come out, and I guess I'm just concerned.
Oh, well, if you have Internet access,
you can print it off.
Just go to irs.gov. There's all kinds of different forms in PDF format, and you can print the form off and have immediate access to it. It's form 5405.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Since they brought that issue up, there is a new first-time home buyer's credit. If you haven't owned a home in the prior 3 years and you buy a new principal or a principal residence, you get a credit of 10% of the purchase price up to $7,500. That's the good news. The bad news is you got to pay it back at the rate of over the next 15 years. If you got the full $7,500 credit, you got to pay back $500 a year, starting 2 years after the year you bought the house. So it applies to homes purchased on or after April 9th, 2008, and on or before June 30th, 2009.
So there'd be some reasons sometimes maybe for wanting to take that and other times not.
Right.
Yeah. Jim in La Crosse, on to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Say, I've been using the free file online, the TurboTax.
Yeah.
For federal. Just using the Easy, and I've had four submissions rejected because they said that my PIN, which is my AGI from last year, was not what was recorded at the IRS. And I called the IRS, and they said, heck yeah, that's the number we got on file for you. Now what the heck do I do?
I have really no idea. I don't use those types of services, so I'm not familiar with them. We have our own software that we use for ourselves and our clients. So I just don't use those services. So I don't know what to tell you. Maybe, Larry, you...
The thing that I would do is I'd be getting a hold of TurboTax.
if you've already gotten a hold of the IRS and the IRS said, well, that's the right number, there's maybe trouble.
I guess that. Just make sure you meet all the eligibility requirements for using the free file, whatever they are, income limitations and so forth. But since I don't use those services, I'm in no position to advise you.
All right. There you go, Jim. Thanks. Paul in Madison, on to you. Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for having this great show. I started an LLC last year after I was laid off, and in order to do so, I needed to purchase equipment. Could not get a loan. Took a good amount of money out of my 401k in order to get myself back on my feet, and do not expect to make anything this year on that. Will that be taxable income? I haven't even set up with an accountant yet.
Okay, the fund.
I know it's taxable income because I took it out of my 401k.
Right. Okay.
But
yes.
Since will I be able to write that off against my business loss for the first year here?
Sure. Your 401k withdrawal, as you point out, will be taxable, and if you're under age 59 or half, or age 55, you likely will have a 10% premature withdrawal penalty on the federal. And Wisconsin has a penalty of 1/3 of that. So complete form 5329 as well. So it sounds like you started you own the LLC yourself.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Just me and myself.
All right. So that's a disregarded entity from a federal tax reporting perspective. So you just do your own Schedule C, where you report your business income and expenses. In connection with the purchase of equipment, if you have other business income, which includes salary for 2008, you're talking about 2008, right?
Yes, sir.
The purchase of the equipment. You can section 179 expense up to $25,000 for Wisconsin, $250,000 on your federal return, and immediately expense that. So that
Great.
Should help you to offset the 401k distribution.
Just happened to be about that amount.
Well, that should work. That should work out well for you then.
All right.
So when you look at the form, when you look at the form 4562, there is a business income limitation, but your wages count as business income for that limit.
All right. I forgot to pay myself first.
Yeah. Well, pay yourself. Pay yourself, Paul.
Well, I'll say just as a single member LLC, you're treated as self-employed, not a common law employee.
Oh.
So
okay.
you wouldn't be a common law employee. It's the Schedule C net income that
will gotcha.
Count then plus his wages for
All
the
right.
business income limit.
Joe in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. This past year I received a small insurance settlement from somebody else's auto insurance due to some injuries. Is that money taxable?
If it's physical, personal injury, it's not taxable.
Okay.
So, you know, for pain and suffering or, you know, a physical injury, if it's for other purposes, then it could be taxable. But so if you were injured in an auto accident, it would likely be physical personal injury and be excludable.
Okay. Thank you very much.
But, All you right. know, go back and take a look at the settlement itself, and it'll allocate or it'll tell you what the settlement is for, and then you got to characterize it from a tax perspective accordingly.
Steve Schmidt, our guest today, a certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, as we talk preparing your income taxes. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take your question about your income tax returns at 800-642-1234. Megan in Richland Center up next, so let's go right to Megan. Megan, hi.
Hi. I just had a question. Me and my husband had bought a hybrid vehicle this year, and we heard there was some sort of tax credit involved with that, and I was wondering if you knew anything about how to go about claiming that. Or
Sure. For new vehicles, there's four different types of cars that may be eligible. There's qualified fuel cell, there's advanced lean burn technology, there's hybrid, and alternative fuel. So if not too many of those vehicles have been sold, then you're eligible for credit. If you go to IRS Form 8910, and the related instructions, they list all the vehicles that are eligible for credit.
Oh.
Okay.
All right. There you go.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And we don't know whether that'll extend into 2009 or not yet, I don't imagine.
The credits will still be Prius hybrid, the Prius, I mean, too many of those have been sold. They're no longer eligible for the credit. But there are many other vehicles that are still eligible
Okay, gotcha.
For the credit.
Peggy in Winona, Minnesota. On to you now. Hi, Peg.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. Several years ago, my mother-in-law died, and my husband and I inherited part of her estate, and we did nothing with it because we didn't know what to do with it. About 6 months after we inherited this, we bought a vehicle with it. We took all our taxes into our tax man at the end of the year, and he sent us to a CPA because he said it was so confusing that we had to pay taxes on the estate. And since then, I've talked to people that haven't had to pay taxes on inheritances. Why did we have to pay taxes? Is it because somebody tried to explain it to me and said that if you don't sell the stock after you get it and you make money on it, that's what you're paying the taxes on? Is that how it works?
Sure. Let's just use an example. Let's say your mother passed away and she had stock that was worth $50,000.
Okay.
You then inherited that stock.
Okay.
And then, let's say, 8 months after death, you sold the stock for $75,000. Mm-hmm. So
I pay tax on the $25,000.
You pay tax on the $25,000. At the date of death, you get a new basis in the property, a fair market value at date of death. But then any gain or loss after that time.
So if you sell the stock the day after you get it, that's what you should do then?
Well, yeah. Hey, it's nice it went up because you had more than you would have had.
Yeah.
And, of course, the cost of having a gain from a tax perspective is you got to pay income tax. By the way, inherited property, you automatically get long-term holding period. Even if you only held it for 6 months or 8 months before you sold the property, it'll be a long-term gain. Normally, you have to hold property more than 12 months to get long-term gain.
Oh, okay.
So, and then
and that's a better deal.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You pay tax at a 15% rate maximum. Or in 2008, if you're in less than 25% bracket, it's actually a zero rate on long-term capital gain. And it was 5% last year. So there are some very low rates on long-term capital gains. Wisconsin, you only pay tax on 40% of a long-term capital gain, not the whole dollar amount. So
there you go. Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Peg. Paul and Ladysmith, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Morning. I turned 70 and a half in 2009. And I have a number of plans, retirement plans, annuities, and so on that I have participated in. And I have no intention to collect anything if I don't have to. Now, President Bush did suspend our necessity to collect in this year. Does each of the plans that I'm a member of, are they responsible to send me some kind of a form where I make that choice?
Well, you just won't need to withdraw for 2009. You're absolutely right. Normally, when the year in which you reach age 70 and a half, you have to start required minimum distributions. However, that first year, you can actually delay it for 1 year. You can pull it out by April 1st of the next year. But there, late in the tax year, there was a tax bill that did permit foregoing required minimum distributions for 2009.
Right. Now, they will contact me, I hope, each of the various plans, to ask, do you want to forego? I don't want them to automatically start sending me checks. I don't want them this year.
I would anticipate that they would do that. I haven't, checked with any of those. But check with your plan custodians.
Yeah, I was wondering how much time should I give them, because I have gotten a form from one, but there are three or four others that haven't heard anything yet, and I...
Yeah.
I don't want them to just assume that I want to take the money
and pay it. I'm sure they'll communicate with you.
Yeah. But to be safe, you just call them.
Sure.
Just call them and ask. We have Scott in the line now from La Crosse. So let's go to Scott. Hi, Scott.
Hi there. Thanks for the show. And good morning to you both. Got a quick general question, and maybe you can discuss the ramifications of this for everyone. I have a friend who does his own taxes who ran into something in the updated software that said that the stimulus checks so many of us received last year were not actually any kind of a giveaway, but were actually loans against our tax refunds that we would be getting for 2008. And first of all, is that true? And secondly, I'm sure there's going to be people who will, did they get 1099s if they, I'm assuming it's something where it's incorporated into the way the refund structure would work.
All right. First of all, the economic stimulus payments are not taxable.
Okay.
They're specifically excluded from income. Secondly, if you received the payment and you received what you should have or more than you should have, you just keep it and you don't need to report anything on your tax return. If you received less payment than you should have, because let's say, for example, your income in 2007 on which the IRS based the rebate was $1 million, okay?
Okay.
There was a phase out of the credit and you wouldn't get a credit. But let's say on your 2008 return, your income was only $50,000. Well, now you're eligible for the full stimulus payment. And there's a line on the tax return. It's called the recovery rebate credit. So if you're single, you'd get the full $600 as a credit on your 2008 return. If it's a joint return, you'd get $1,200, then plus $300 for any eligible child. So this is one situation where the tax law is stacked in your favor. If you got too much in the advance payment, you get to keep it. If you didn't get enough, you get to claim a credit on your 2008 return.
That's a very good deal.
That's unusual in the tax law.
Very unusual. So there you have it, Scott. Thank you very much for calling. And we'll turn to an email from Eunice, who contributes to her grandchildren's 529 accounts. Is this tax deductible for her?
Okay. On the federal side, there is no tax deduction for making a 529 contribution. On Wisconsin, if you make it to EdVest or one other eligible type of account, then you can get up to a $3,000 deduction per person per year.
Okay.
So quite limited.
Quite limited. All right. On to John in Beloit next. John, hello.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I really enjoy your program. Okay, here's my situation. About 10 years ago, I bought some stock, and I had dividend reinvestment. And this summer, just before the real downfall, I decided to sell the stock. So, but I did take a loss even then, though it was a summer. My question is, because I had dividend reinvestment, I got like dividends every 3 months. I have all these dates for 10 years of purchase, et cetera, et cetera. Now, when I fill in my tax, will I have to claim all the dates that I purchased stock, or can I just put the net gain and net loss?
I would suggest you break it in two.
Okay.
The ones you received within 12 months.
Okay, 12 months.
Of sale are going to be short term.
Okay, 12 months.
So you compare your selling price of those shares to the amount you included in income.
Okay.
And it sounds like that'll result in a loss for you.
Yes.
Then if you want to, you can add up everything else and just report it as a single line on long term.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then, you know, for your acquisition date, you would put various and, you know, the date of sale.
Okay, now, because I did buy an original investment 10 years ago, then it was, but I could put everything past 12 months as long-term and just put various.
Yes, yeah. And you'll get the right tax result.
Okay, and now, to be honest with you, the loss is going to be over $3,000, and so I believe even next year I can carry over some of that loss?
Yes. Capital losses offset capital gains.
Correct.
And then they offset $3,000 of other income on the federal return, only $500 on Wisconsin. So you'll have a $2,500 addition to add to your Wisconsin income.
Well, thank you very much. My question. Have a good day now.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Losses carry over to the future indefinitely.
Jane emails that her parents assigned their home over to her in 1988. Both were alive at the time. They have both passed away, and I sold the home in 2008. Is capital gains tax based on the gains in value from 1988 or from the time they bought or built the home?
If it was a gift and they didn't retain any right to use the property, then it would be the lesser of the cost of the property or the fair market value at the date of gift would be her basis.
Okay.
Now, sometimes parents will gift their property to their children and retain the right to use it or live there until they die.
Yeah.
If that's a situation, under a couple technical tax rules, the property was properly includable in their taxable estate, And if that was the situation, if that were the situation, you might get a day-to-death basis step up.
Okay.
So you need to get more into the facts of that situation to really answer that question. But if it was a clean gift, parents moved out, then it's probably the parents' old cost.
All right. Paul in Duluth, Minnesota, we're on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Larry, and thank you so much to your guest for helping here today. I have been on Social Security disability for about 10 years, and I applied for the economic stimulus package payment last year, and I thought I was going to get $600. I only got $300. I was talking with the screener, and I just caught the very end of something you said to a previous caller. Should I go ahead and file and get an additional $300?
I don't think you're eligible. If your only income is SSDI, the $300 amount would be correct.
Okay. So does that mean I don't have to file?
That's correct. Yes. If you have no gross income, and Social Security wouldn't be gross income for this purpose, you would not need to file an income tax return, nor would you be eligible for any additional recovery rebate.
Okay. That's all I had. Hey, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Richard in Deerfield, Wisconsin, with us now. Hi, Richard.
Good morning. Thank you. I tore an article out of the newspaper which states that those of us who do not itemize could claim an additional standard deduction of up to $1,000 for property taxes paid in 08 and 09. I don't know where to claim that.
You will claim that on if you go to Form 1040. I have actually a Form 1040 in front of me here. It's on page 2, and it's line 39C at the top. It says, check if standard deduction includes real estate taxes or disaster losses. So line 39C.
Okay, thank you. I've been perusing that, but I guess pretty carefully enough.
That's all right. Happy to help.
All right, thanks. And Carl has emailed and says, my question regards the deductibility of property taxes. My wife and her two brothers have title by a life estate of the family farm. My mother-in-law needed help paying the property taxes this year, so my wife and one of her brothers paid the property taxes. Are those taxable? Are those taxes deductible on our returns?
I didn't quite follow the example. Does the taxpayer have any interest in the property at all?
She has a title by what he called title by a life estate. I think he said.
Don't know the answer to that one.
That's a tough.
Yeah. Sometimes if you're a co-tenant in property, oftentimes you're in a position where you'll be able to deduct taxes. But I, you might want to get a little bit. Better understanding of the facts there, and so I can't answer that authoritatively here.
All right. Let's go to Tom in Watertown then. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have a question regarding the loss from insurance on a hailstorm on the shingles of a house. We had over $4,000 damage, and the insurance paid all but about $2,100. Is that $2,100 deductible as a loss?
Yes, and the reason I'm hedging is there's a couple different sets of rules. The normal casualty loss is your out-of-pocket loss needs to exceed $100 plus 10% of your adjusted gross income. So if you exceed that, then you can take the excess as a casualty loss as a miscellaneous itemized deduction.
And the deductible also for the automobile, the truck, paid all of it.
Right. Now, there's some all kinds of special disaster relief for the Midwestern disasters that occurred in 2008.
Yeah.
All kinds of different things.
Yeah.
From, you know, well, one of those is if it's the Midwestern disaster relief, then
certain rules apply to
you that. Don't have either the $100 floor or the 10% AGI limit. You get to deduct all your unreimbursed casualty loss. Non-itemizers. Normally, your casualty loss is an itemized deduction.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't itemize your deductions, you get a standard deduction. All right?
Right.
And then there's all kinds of other benefits as well. And what I'm going to do is just refer you to an IRS publication that you can get at the IRS website. And if you were in the Midwestern disaster area, it's publication 4492-B. And it's titled Information for Affected Taxpayers in the Midwestern Disaster Areas.
4492-B.
Right.
Okay.
And so for those of our listeners that were impacted by those spring, summer storms here in Wisconsin, I think there's like 30 counties that were declared federal disaster areas. There's a number of benefits that you might be able to take advantage of.
We have an email from David who says, we moved to Wisconsin from Pennsylvania in 2007 for a job. We sold our house in Pennsylvania in 2008. But because of the downturn in the housing market, we had to take money from our 401k to pay the difference between the selling price and the remainder on the mortgage plus realtor fees. Does the loss on the house offset taking money from the 401k?
No.
Oh.
A loss on a personal use asset is not deductible. Now, if you have profit on that house, there's a residential exclusion provision if you're eligible. But on a personal use asset, if you have profit, unless there's an exclusion, you pay tax on it. But if you have a loss, it's not deductible. Unlike the listener that had stocks, since you buy stocks for investment to make money, then the losses are deductible.
Gotcha. Michael in Ferryville, your turn. Hi, Michael.
Hi there. I just want to say thanks. You're a geyser of knowledge and information in this area, and I appreciate it. I just have two questions. One, I'm a 100% disabled veteran as of recently, and I was just wondering if you know of any special tax credits or breaks that are out there for that particular scenario. And then also, if you could briefly explain, if you know about it, 30% federal tax credit for solar that's available right now. And that's my question.
Okay. I don't work with any disabled vets right now, so I don't know all the breaks that exist. But the Wisconsin Department of Revenue has a publication dealing with that very issue.
Oh.
And I would guess that the IRS does as well. So if you want to get those publications, that will help you on understanding what all the benefits and breaks are. There are a number.
There are a lot of them.
So, but since I don't have any clients of mine in that situation, I don't know what they all are. But there are publications that are available that will explain those to you. Both, if you look at the Wisconsin Form 1 instructions, I know they cover a number of the different benefits and exclusions and credits that are available as well. So, now on to your question on the energy credits. If you get Form 5695 and the instructions, that'll contain a lot of detail for you. But if I can just give a little background, in 2006, residential energy credits came in, and for the kind of the insulation, the windows, the doors, that credit applies for 2006, 2007. It was resurrected in 2008, but not for 2008, only for 2009, okay? So that limited $500 credit lapsed at the end of 07, doesn't come back until 2009. But the 30% credit for alternative energy expenditures applies from 2006 through 2016.
Okay.
And the credit is 30% of the cost of the eligible property and the installation of that property. And it includes such things as solar or electric power, solar water heating, qualified fuel cells, wind energy, and then a new one basically the wind and geothermal are new starting in 2008.
Okay.
So each of those has different limitations based on how energy efficient is, and you almost have to be an engineer to understand what you're applying. But the Form 5695 contains more details for you on that.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks, Michael, for calling. Appreciate your call. Patty emails and says she's traveling from Madison to Wausau for work and would like to know if she can claim her gas and food costs that she acquires during her travels.
If you live in Madison and work in Wausau, that's going to be personal commuting unless it's a temporary job site.
Okay, so if it's a temporary job, she could claim.
Yeah, I mean, if I normally work out of Madison, okay, but let's say I'm an auditor and I've got a two-month audit of a client in Wausau.
Okay.
In that situation, traveling from my home to that client is business mileage, all right?
Okay.
But if I regularly live in Madison and I regularly work in Wausau, that is simply non-deductible commuting. Where you live is a matter of personal preference, and getting from home to work and back is personal commuting non-deductible.
Understood. John in Cashton, it's up to you now. Hi, John.
Hi. Thank you for your answering a lot of good questions. Mm-hmm. My question has to do with I'm an independent contractor, and I get 1099 forms at the end of the year. And I have moved, and I'm quite certain that a couple of my 1099 forms have not been forwarded. What can I simply file with my own knowledge of what that income was? And second question is, do I have to keep a record of that if I don't receive them?
You certainly can file your return without having received 1099s. You should keep records of all your business income and expense. Matter of fact, they can assess negligence penalties if you don't. So hopefully you should be able to compute what your business income and expenses are, even though you don't get the forms 1099. So if you can figure that out, no need to wait for the forms.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see. Turn to Dorothy in Presque Isle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Larry. Just want to thank you for a great show again. And I'm the better half of Dan, who sent you the spider email yesterday.
Oh. I loved it, by the way. My daughter and I had a lot of fun playing with it last night.
Oh, so do we. Okay, I have two questions. One is on the stimulus payment, and I didn't realize we got our $600 as a married filing jointly. And everybody that we've talked to around us now that it's tax time are all saying they got $1,200. Should we have gotten $1,200 for that?
Yes. However, there are... If you're married filing jointly with no children, the credit was $1,200. But if your adjusted gross income on a joint return exceeded $150,000, then it was subject to phase out. Okay?
Okay.
If,
well, we weren't anywhere near that, so it would hold that.
Okay. Then what you should do is there's a worksheet on pages 62 and 63 of the Form 1040 instructions.
Okay.
Work through that worksheet. Let's say you are entitled to $1,200. You only receive $600. That worksheet will result in $600, which will come forward to page 2 of Form 1040 on line 70, and you'll claim your additional $600 credit on the 2008 Form 1040.
Oh, great. Okay.
So if you're
now, the second question that I have is in the ARP magazine from September in October 2008, there's a question and answer in there that people who are cashing out investments won't have to pay any taxes on them this year. And then they go on saying that tailor-made for retirees with lower incomes who have stocks and bonds to sell. Now, we cashed in some savings bonds because they were mature and not earning any interest anymore. Would that fit into that category?
I don't understand what the ARP article is saying. I mean, there must have been a unique set of facts. But in your situation, when you redeem U.S. savings bonds, if you haven't been reporting the interest each year, then you have to report the interest when you cash them in. So the redemption proceeds less what you paid for the bond will be taxable as U.S. interest on this year's tax return, fully taxable on your federal return, but will be excluded on your Wisconsin return. On the Wisconsin return, there's a line to subtract U.S. interest.
Okay.
Then, in other words, the U.S. savings bonds wouldn't fit into the stock and bond category that they had?
No, because you actually had a gain on that anyway.
That's interest income. And, I'm not sure what that ARP article discussed, but it's not relevant to your situation.
Not relevant. Thank you very much for calling. Steve Schmidt, our guest today, a certified public accountant and a managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Talking taxes and tax returns with Steve Schmidt of the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. Steve's been with us for a number of years and always does a great job answering our tax questions. Kelly emailed us and said she had surgery last year, generated a lot of medical expenses, wondering what paperwork she needs to supply the IRS. Can you request an end-of-the-year statement from medical providers? Will it need to exceed the standard deduction to even make it worthwhile? She typically uses Tax Cut Online.
Medical expenses are deductible to the extent they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So what she should do is add up all her out-of-pocket medical expenses for 2008, including medical insurance if she paid any out of her own funds. Compare that to 7.5% of her adjusted gross income. The excess would be the deductible amount. Then you add up all your other itemized deductions, and if it exceeds the standard deduction amount, then you can claim the itemized. For a single taxpayer for 2008, the standard deduction is $5,450. On a joint return, it's $10,900. So that's kind of the threshold you need to get over to make it worthwhile to itemize. So there's two thresholds, the standard deduction amount and then the 7.5% floor for medical expenses.
Leonard and Woodruff, we're on to you now. Hi, Len.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I'm looking to kind of recover some of my investment in my summer home. So I wanted to charge my children like $100 a month. And there are five of them, and I want to use that money for vacationing and traveling elsewhere. And upon my debt, well, first of all, I would enter them into the ownership of the home along with our name, and I was wondering if I can do that, and also if they'll have any problems with upon my debt in changing the title and paying any taxes of any kind.
So you really want to change part of the ownership of your summer home to your children.
Along with us.
Along with you. And then they will make contributions to paying the expenses along with you.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds doable. The only potential drawback is if the property is highly appreciated and you gift it. If you make them part owners now, you've made a gift of the property. And you may need to file a gift tax return. An advantage of maybe you holding it all until your death, if you're going to hold it long-term in the family, then you'll get a basis step up in the whole property to the date of death value in the future. So to really properly advise you, it's not feasible over a show such as this to do that. But seek out a competent CPA or estate planning lawyer or a CPA to take a look at your whole situation to see what might make sense for you in that regard.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you. Dave in Harshaw, Wisconsin, wants to follow up on the solar tax credit question. Is this credit available if you are subject to the AMT, alternative minimum tax?
Ooh, my recollection is, I'd have to check. There was a change in the personal credits went away, and then they changed the AMT. They increased the exemption amount, and then they allowed the some of the personal credits against the AMT again. And I don't recall off the top of my head whether that was one, but there was a tax law change late in the year, but I just don't recall exactly what the conclusion is on that.
So he needs to.
But some of the credits that would have not been eligible are now, and I just don't. There's a whole laundry list of them. I just don't remember if that's included.
All right, Cindy in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I have a question. I'm new to the self-employment thing, and I'm wondering if Steve could recommend somebody that could help me explain it to me, you know, what I'm supposed to claim, what I'm supposed to keep, things like that. Because I don't know, I've never been self-employed, so I don't even know how to file my taxes this year.
Okay. Then I would suggest you seek out a competent tax preparer, a CPA or an enrolled agent or something along those lines, and sit down and discuss your situation with them. But just to generalize here, of course, all your business income is going to be taxable, and you use Schedule C to report your income. In addition to that, then your deductions related to earning that income are deductible against that income on Schedule C. So a good place for you to start would be Schedule C and its instructions. It'll help you a little bit. And also, the IRS has a publication on business income deductions that might be of interest to you. Mm-hmm. But
okay, because we don't even get a 1099 at the end of the year.
Oh, okay.
Which is making it even more difficult.
Yes. But just as we mentioned a little bit earlier in the show, make sure you keep records of what your business income and expenses are, and then that'll be very helpful when it comes time to prepare your tax return.
All right. Good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Michelle received a 1099 for an amount left over from a Capital One credit card settlement back in 1997. Basically, I settled the outstanding debt by paying 50% of the total. The 1099 is for the unpaid amount. Why now, after all these years, and can I pretend I didn't get it?
Basically, is when debt is discharged, mm-hmm. the general rule is that discharge of indebtedness income is taxable.
Okay.
However, there are exceptions. One exception is if you're in bankruptcy, there's an exclusion. If you're insolvent at the time the discharge occurs, there's an exclusion. There's a new provision on home mortgages for federal, not Wisconsin. It doesn't apply to Wisconsin. But if your mortgage is reduced, there's an exclusion for reduction of mortgage indebtedness. So unless you meet an exception, debt discharge is taxable income. The reason she probably got the 1099 this year is because the debt was discharged. This year. Now, it could have been a matter of a statute of limitations. It was old, and it was because of that, it was no longer collectible, or the company may have written it off for other reasons, and it was no longer pursuing. But that's probably the issue she has to contend with here.
That's it. And Tim from Appleton said the other day on public radio, a gentleman was discussing all those Ponzi schemes, Madoff, mm-hmm. and all that. Is there a tax deduction for those who have fallen victim to investment schemes of that nature?
Yes, there will be, and I'm not going to opine on any particular situation, but there's likely two different conclusions. One, you might have had a capital loss. You bought and sold for more or less. But in a situation such as Madoff, it sounds like theft and fraud, in which case it's possible you might have a theft loss as well, which is taken as an itemized deduction on Schedule A and subject to the $100 floor and the 10% of adjusted gross income limitation, just as we discussed a few minutes ago on the casualty loss situation. But very factually intensive, and then, are there going to be recoveries? So that's quite involved. Matter of fact, our firm has a group of people who are looking at this very situation. Mm. And there's been a number of situations. There's one in Minnesota. There's the Madoff case. There's another one. Was it Agape here that was just hit the news on a $400 million? So with the down market, all this stuff is coming to roost. And but those are, the two types of losses you're going to have from a situation such as that.
Here's another email from Bonnie, who says, I'm just wondering, I took a college class and took money out of my IRA to pay for my class in 2008 at a private school, but then I received a grant for classes at another school still in Wisconsin. Just wondering, can I write off the money I took out of my IRA for schooling? It's a part-time student at MATC.
All right. Education expenses are deductible as an itemized deduction in employee business expense if you're already in a trade or business and you're taking the education to improve and enhance your skills. Where education expenses are not deductible is if you haven't met the minimum education requirements for a trade or profession, then those education expenses are not deductible, nor are they deductible if they qualify you for a different type of business. For example, I'm a CPA. If I went back to law school to get my law degree, even though the law degree would help me as a tax practitioner, since it qualifies me for a different profession, the legal education expenses would not be deductible.
I gotcha. So there you have it. Steve Schmidt, our guest today, managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey, as we talk with him about preparing your income tax returns. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Talking your income tax return today with Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and managing director in the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you listening. And lots of callers online right now. The number is 800-642-1234. John in Portage County is up first here, so let's go to John. Hi, John.
Hi, Steve and Larry. Thanks for taking my call. And could you clarify a point about the stimulus payment if we are due a refund from an earned income credit for dependents? In other words, for example, if we are due a $2,000 federal refund and we received a $1,200 stimulus payment, will that be subtracted from the $2,000?
No.
No, that's right. Yeah, the stimulus payment stands on its own.
Okay, so the earned income credit would not be affected in any way adversely.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the, there's also an additional child care credit or something that some parents receive for additional dependents.
Yes, and there's a form you need to file with that. It's a form 8812.
Correct.
So, you know, if you're eligible for that, the credit will come forward onto your form 1040 and factor into, it's a refundable credit.
But will that reduce the amount of that additional credit? Will the stimulus reduce?
No.
So neither one is affected?
That's correct.
Okay, I thought there was something to that in the instructions last year when they were being put out. Okay, well, I thank you very much for your answer.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Rhonda had a question kind of related to that, too. She says, I've heard that if I was pregnant in 2007 and delivered in 2008, I would qualify to receive the extra money the tax stimulus would give for a child. Is that true? And if yes, how do I get it?
Yes. The credit is actually a 2008 credit that was given in advance based on your filed 2007 income tax returns.
Oh.
So when you're working on your 2008 income tax return, you get to compute that credit again. There's a worksheet in the instructions on pages 62 and 63. And if the credit you're ultimately eligible for exceeds the payment you receive, then you claim the additional credit on your 2008 income tax return on Form 1040. It's on line 70. So
there you have it.
That's the way you do it.
Tom in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hello. I think you may have just answered my question. In 07, I was forced to take a substantial amount out of my IRA, bringing my total income for the year up over the $90,000 limit for the stimulus package.
Okay.
Without single tax withdrawal, I would not have been over that limit.
Right.
Am I eligible?
Yes. If your income, you're a single taxpayer?
Yes.
Okay. So if your income for 2008 is less than $75,000, you'll get the full credit. And if it's more than that, then it phases out at a 5% rate to the extent income exceeds $75,000.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right. On a joint return, that threshold is $150,000, not $75,000.
And let's see, Dave in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Dave.
Good morning, Steve and Larry. Appreciate this opportunity. I've been using TurboTax the last 4 or 5 years. My taxes are relatively straightforward, retirement income and Social Security, a small interest. And I've been paying taxes every year and so forth. And this year I logged on to TurboTax and went through the numbers and came out with a number that didn't seem right. It just seemed out of whack based on the past and so forth, and there weren't that many changes. In fact, in the Wisconsin state tax, it was like just way out of sight. Well, TurboTax doesn't let you talk to them unless you pay to join some club where they'll answer your questions. Kind of a strange setup. But I've gone through my taxes on my own now, just manually with my little machine here.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than owing $1,300 on my federal income tax, it shows that I have a refund coming. And the state was worse yet. Now, I'm wondering how far back I could go to file amended returns if this has been happening for a couple of years and I've had money coming, refunds coming back that I didn't get.
Let me just mention one thing on Wisconsin, Social Security, where in the past Wisconsin would tax up to 50% of Social Security. Starting with 2008, Wisconsin no longer taxes Social Security. So that could be one of the reasons you get a different result on Wisconsin mm-hmm. for 2008 and pay less tax.
It should be the other way.
Yeah.
You should pay,
he's winding up paying more than he.
Yeah. Then, as far as amending returns, basically you have 3 years to amend federal returns, 4 years to amend Wisconsin returns.
So you can go back 3 years or 4 years.
For Wisconsin. Mm-hmm.
All right. There you have it, Dave. So get your pencil out and go ahead.
And then,
again.
Of course, you'd use Form 1040X for federal and Wisconsin 1X for Wisconsin are the forms you'd file. I don't use TurboTax, but, you know, I understand TurboTax is a fairly good software. So I'm wondering if there's something he's not using properly in the program,
yeah.
But I don't know what the issue would be there.
All right. Good luck, Dave. Thank you. Lisa in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I owned a home-based business and still own a home-based business over 2008, and I didn't make a ton of money, but I have a sizable amount of deductions, and I had a friend say something strange to me today that there is such a thing as too many deductions. Is that true?
Well, not necessarily. If you're in a trade or business to really make money, mm-hmm. and if your expenses exceed your income, you're entitled to deduct those losses. On the other hand, some people kind of like to dabble in things, and it's kind of a hobby, and
right.
they generate some income and take deductions. And if it's really a hobby, not a true active trade or business, that's where you can run into disallowance of the deductions and the loss. So it's a matter of, you know, this is really what I do. I'm trying to make money. It's just been a bad year. My expenses exceeded my income, which is happening with more and more business these days, unfortunately.
Right.
But if that's a situation, then the loss should be deductible. On the other hand, if you're really not in it, it's just a hobby. You know, you like to do it, and it's kind of casual. Then you may find yourself in the hobby loss rules.
Okay, right. Well, because I know that when we owned a brick-and-mortar business that there was only so many years that you could actually be in the negative, I thought.
Well, there's an assumption under the hobby loss rules. If you have a loss out of so many years, the presumption is that it's a hobby loss. Then you have the burden of proof, if the IRS challenges you, to prove that it is not a hobby loss.
Okay.
And there's hundreds of cases dealing with the hobby loss issue. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, do all the things normal business do. Keep books and records and, run yourself like a business, and then you increase the chance that you're not going to have a problem with the hobby loss rules.
All right.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Thanks for calling. Luann in Green Bay wonders, she says, I've been donating plasma since November of this year. I'm reimbursed at $60 a week that's applied to a debit card. Do I have to claim this as income? It's not taxed. Also, do I need to obtain documents from the plasma center? So she wonders if this would qualify as income to be added along with the other income that she's receiving.
I don't know why it wouldn't be
income.
I'm not aware of any exclusion for that. Now, Wisconsin for organ donations gives you a tax break, but I'm not aware of anything on the federal side.
Mary in Partyville has a question for you. Mary, hello.
Hello. Wonderful sunny day.
Yeah.
I'd like to know, I bought $15,000 worth of windows in 2008, and I paid for half, and I didn't pay for the other half yet, and they put some windows in 2008 and some in 2009. Do I get a credit of any kind?
Yeah. There's a residential energy credit for qualifying energy efficient improvements. And that credit applies for 2006, 2007, and 2009, but not 2008.
Not 2008?
Not 2008. It It expired at the end of 07. It was resurrected in the in a tax bill in 2008, but not for 2008, only for 2009.
So does that matter if I had half of them put in 2008 and half in 2009 and paid for half in 2009?
Yes. So the 2009 windows should be eligible for the credit. There's the overall credit for this category is $500. But for windows, there's a sub-limitation of $200. So if you had at least $2,000 of windows placed in service or you know installed in 2009, then you'll get your maximum credit of $200. And you'll file Form 5695 with your 2009 income tax return.
All right.
But not 2008, unfortunately.
Not 2008. Okay. Nora and Cameron wonders, do we as grandparents pay taxes on the income from CDs purchased for our grandchildren with our name also on the CD?
If your name is on the CD with your Social Security number, you likely will pay Social Security or income on that. So if you want to get out of that, you know, transfer those to somebody as a custodian on behalf of the grandchildren so you don't need to pay tax on it.
And Kathy says, my mother gifted me the family home. I also own another home, and she's living in that other home now. Do I pay taxes now, or if I sell the house, the family house, what's her tax liability now? So she got the house.
Which home is she selling? The one their mother gifted her?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. So what she sells it for compared to what her mother's cost basis was will be gain. One limit, if the value at the date of gift was less than cost, then you're limited to the value on the date of gift.
Okay. So, Duane and Dalton, on to you now. Hi, Duane.
Hello, how you doing?
Good.
Busy day. I understand you guys are doing real good here today. Question is, I've got a stimulus check back this summer here, and I've got it for the wife and I and two of the three kids. And the other boy, which was older at the time, he was 18 at the time, did not receive his stimulus check either. Now, I claimed him because he still lived at home and still was going to school part of last year, part of 08. And when I called IRS, they said because I claimed him and he worked, he doesn't get it and I don't get it.
That's correct.
So that's kind of odd.
Yeah. You have to be, the same eligibility as for the child tax credit applied for the economic stimulus or the rebate credit. And basically, you got to be under 17 for that child there. So, yeah, you're that child would not be eligible.
Mm-hmm. Duane emailed and talking about kids. Wonders what the effect does having your child turn 16 have on your tax situation? 16? Is there any?
Not much anymore. No, I'm not aware of anything. Dependent care credit is 13. The child tax credit is 17. You know, through 18 or 19 for the dependency exemption, under 24 if you're a full-time student in college. So those are kind of the ages you normally think about being relevant for children on an income tax return.
Terry and Marinette's up next. Hi, Terry.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My question was kind of similar to the lady before with the windows. Is I bought a home last year and put $25,000 into the home in a new roof, siding, windows, and I was wondering if any of that is deductible.
No, it certainly wouldn't be deductible for a personal residence. And then credits, the credits for the insulation, the windows, the doors, does not apply for 2008. But the alternative energy expenditures, if you did any solar or fuel cell or wind or geothermal, there is a credit that applies for 2008, but it doesn't sound like you did any of those items.
No, nothing like that. So, basic repairs.
No, so basically, to the extent you made improvements, you'll add to the cost of your house, and then when you sell it, you'll have a smaller gain.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Tom. Terry. And Tom emailed and said a family member passed away in November. Her total estate was less than $45,000. Question, what are we liable for in taxes from federal and state? There were two CDs of $10,000. One was a pay on death. Also checking and savings accounts of $15,000. There were finally with stocks valued around $7,000. We continued the CDs and the stocks are now in trust for our children.
Okay. Inheritance basically are tax-free, no income tax, except to the extent there was interest that was accrued on the CDs. Mm-hmm. When that interest is paid, that will be taxable, even though it accrued before death.
All right.
So it's just the accrued interest.
Tom in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Tom. Whoop, we lost Tom, I think. Yep, we lost Tom. Jack in Oshkosh, we'll go to you then. Jack, hello.
Jake.
Jake.
That's okay. I purchased a home from a relative who was not my father or mother, who wished to not charge me interest. I also took out a mortgage with them. It's my understanding that if they were to not charge me interest, that the IRS may down the road look and find out and say, hey, you should have been charging this much interest, and now we're going to tax you on that interest that you should have been taking but never actually took. Is there something like that out there?
Yes. It's Internal Revenue Code 7872, and that is the relevant section, which has all kinds of different details. There are a couple of exceptions for gift and income tax purposes, one dealing with $100,000 loans or less. So what you might want to do is take a look at that code section, which obviously we can't do over the radio here.
Right.
But that would be the relevant section for you to look at.
All right. There you go. Tom in La Crosse retired in summer of 2008 at the age of 56, married his spouse is 58. She's not employed. This January, I took a lump sum withdrawal from my 401k to provide funds for the rest of the year. Can I sign a contract to provide part-time work for the duration of 2009? Then in late 2009, can I cancel that contract and again elect a withdrawal from my 401k at the beginning of 2010? And then again, go ahead and, yeah, I don't know.
What's the question?
He wants to know if he can and do this. And I expect he's trying to get around with penalties, withdrawal penalties maybe.
Yeah, I don't have enough facts there.
Not enough facts to go on there. So we'll go to Greg in Green Bay. Greg, hello to you.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I got two questions. One of them was spurred by listening to another caller. But one is, my wife and I make around the $120,000 range. Last year, we had about charitable contributions of about $5,700. And this year, it's probably not going to be too different. Is that an amount that would cause the IRS to flag? Or does that seem an unreasonable sum?
So that's around 4% of your income.
No, I don't think that's unusual at all. I would just suggest that, keep your documentation on all those contributions. Anything over 250 or more at one time, you need a written acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, cash out of pocket is no longer deductible without a receipt. You used to put $50 a Sunday in the plate in cash, and you didn't use your envelope, and there's no documentation. That clearly isn't deductible anymore. But other than that, if you keep your documentation, I don't see any problem with that level of contribution.
Well, when you say documentation, then, so we primarily give tons and tons of clothing, and mother-in-laws will bring it down and such to Goodwill. And when you go to Goodwill, they give you a pretty generic form to fill in. Well, I've certainly handed them 3 or 4 55-gallon plastic bags of clothes that's going to be over $250.
Sure, and when they'll give you that written acknowledgement, they don't have to claim the value, but on there it just needs to say the date and what you gave, a description of what you gave, and then it has to have the magical language that no goods or services were received in exchange for the contribution. Then you have the right to value that at fair market value, which basically would be thrift shop value, which of course isn't anywhere near the original cost on used clothing. But and then you need, if your contribution of property exceeds $500, you need to complete and fill out Form 8283.
And so when we've done that in the past, my wife and I, we write down every shirt and every pair of pants and all this. So we have that record, and I suppose that's probably the best way to do it.
Sure. And now those things have to be in good condition to claim a deduction.
Yep. So there you have it.
One rapid quick one then. His father passed away maybe 4 years ago. We had he had about a $48,000 IRA that we children dispersed among us, but we did pay federal and state taxes on that. Should we not have done that?
No. IRA would be taxable.
Okay.
Most inheritances are tax-free, but items that are called income in respect of decedent, things that would have been taxable had the decedent received them before he died, that latent tax ordinary income character carries on to the heirs who receive that.
Okay, excellent.
Unlike a house or stock that get a date-of-death value.
On to Lucille in Luxembourg. Hi, Lucille.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I'm wondering is my husband and I are divorced, but I still take care of all his affairs and everything, and he's on disability. But he also pays for the house that I live in. And I have been told that he doesn't have to file taxes this year because he's on disability. But he also pays all the interest on the houses and all that. Now, does he have to or should he? Or will he get anything? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. You own the house or he owns the house?
Well, both our names are on the deed or the whatever.
All right. Your filing requirement is based on gross income, not deductions. So if his gross income is less than the required amount, which is $5,450 plus $3,500 plus an additional amount of $1,350 if he's over 65, if his income is less than that, he would not need to file.
What about all the interest he's paying on the house and everything?
That's a deduction. That's not income. So if you don't have income that you need to file, then the deductions wouldn't save you anything anyway.
Right.
Because if your income is less than the filing requirement, if you did a pro forma tax return, you would see that you would owe no tax.
Okay. He's on disability, and he earns like $21,000, $22,000 a year.
Yeah. So you need to find out what type of disability he's on, because sometimes if it's an employer-paid disability policy, it could be wholly or partially taxable. If it's Social Security, it likely wouldn't be. So, but the paying company, if it is taxable, would give you a form indicating the taxable amount.
Mm-hmm.
What about this money that the government's, whatever is it called, I forget.
Well, stimulus package?
Yeah.
The rebate? That's not taxable.
That is not taxable. And unfortunately, we are out of time. Lucille, thank you. And Steve, thank you so much.
You are welcome.
You'll be back on the 24th of February.
Yes, indeed.
And we'll do this all over again. Steve Schmidt, certified public accountant and a managing director at the Madison office of RSM McGladrey. He does a great job, doesn't he? It's always great to have him along at tax time, and he's back next month, and I think he's back the month after that as well, so we're looking forward to that. And looking forward to tomorrow's program. Tomorrow, Phil Pelletieri, UW Extension entomologist, will be with us to talk about the wonderful world of insects. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.